Good evening, Duncan.
Yes,
welcome to the
evening.
Space Show.
Thank you, Andrew.
Now in July, a comet called Shoemaker-Levy 9 will hit the planet Jupiter. How are comets named?
They're named actually after their discoverers, and this particular one was yet another one of the discoveries by a team consisting of Jean Shoemaker, his wife Caroline Shoemaker, and David Levy, a team that 1 week every month, 7 nights every month, they use a small telescope, relatively small telescope, at the Palomar Observatory in California. It's a type of telescope called a Schmidt telescope, which covers a wide field of view, and they scoured the skies looking for comets and asteroids which are of interest, and they're extremely successful in what they do.
Have you actually met these people?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, here in Australia, people should be especially aware that asteroids and comets can and do hit the Earth from time to time, because we know of 19 impact craters here in Australia. Some of them are quite well known, like Wolf Creek in the north of Western Australia, or there's the
Gosses
Bluff, for example. People know, 300 kilometres to the west of Alice Springs. And then there's the Henbury craters down just over the border into the Northern Territory from South Australia. So as I say, there are 19 impact craters in Australia, and probably the world's expert on that is Jean Shoemaker. In fact, the two Shoemakers usually spend 2 or 3 months a year here driving around the outback sizing up those craters, and we get to meet up then, and also obviously we get to meet up at least once a year, quite often twice a year, at international astronomical conferences. Equally well, David Levy is a very proficient person. I should point out that he's an amateur astronomer, in that when he was at university he studied English literature. He didn't study physics or astronomy, and came into astronomy rather later, and has joined the Shoemaker team, and they're obviously a very prolific and very successful team at what they do.
So Shoemaker, that's Eugene, he began as a geologist, didn't he?
Yes, a type of geologist, an astrogeologist, which is somebody who studies craters and so on. In fact, he was the man who was very largely responsible for training the Apollo astronauts in their geological side of things. And in fact, it's one of his lifetime regrets that he never got to go to the moon, which is where he really wanted to go. But certainly, ever since he was an undergraduate student, he's been interested not just in geology, but also the astronomical side of things. That is, he's interested in the craters formed when the objects hit the Earth, but also he's interested in, you know, what are these objects which can hit the Earth, and where are they coming from, where are they going, and how do they affect us, and so on. So it's a kind of mixture. I can't really call him a polymath, in that really it's two different aspects of basically the same problem.
Has he ever talked to you about his desire to go to the moon?
Oh, absolutely. I was very happy to be at his retirement party in October last year in Flagstaff, Arizona, when the U.S. Geological Survey, I guess, formally kicked him out. I mean, he reached the retirement age, so he had to go. That is, they stopped paying him, although, of course, he still has an office, and, in fact, he's also joined the Lowell Observatory for his astronomical side of things, and he's still a powerhouse. Indeed, even during this year, 1994, he's been the leader of the imaging team for the Clementine spacecraft, which was injected into orbit around the moon back in January and carried out a very successful 70-day mission of remapping the moon at higher resolution than we've ever had before. So he's still involved in, you know, looking at the moon, and I guess he would have dearly loved to, as I say, been dropped down onto the moon at some stage during his career to take a look at these craters up closer. But the main way, I guess, he's actually got his hands on some craters has been craters here on the Earth.
It's a bit of a, well, not quite irony, but it's certainly interesting that, yeah, he wanted to go to the moon, and the 25th anniversary of that is happening in exactly the same week that the comet he and his co-workers have discovered is hitting Jupiter.
So I think he would have preferred, if instead of hitting Jupiter, it would have hit a nice planetary surface, so some craters were formed. Jupiter, of course, only is a gas giant. It doesn't have a solid surface, at least not one we can see, so no craters are going to be formed, just massive explosions in the atmosphere. But yes, obviously he's very excited about the whole thing. We've discussed this, and of course we realised long ago that in fact the most likely planet to be hit in any such event is indeed Jupiter, because it is the biggest of the planets. And so I guess we're getting to get a good view of what happens to a planet when it's thumped hard, because the perturbations of the atmosphere of Jupiter will be of interest to us in trying to decipher or imagine what would happen to the Earth, or has happened to the Earth, when we've been hit by asteroids and comets in the past. So everything is fitting together. We've got a natural laboratory, if you like, where we can see the effects upon another planet, and from that model with more accuracy what would happen to the Earth when, I've got to say when, not if, we are hit by asteroids or comets, because we know we have been in the past and we will be in the future.
And what's Carolyn's background?
Actually, Carolyn was training, I believe, as a geologist at Caltech when Jean Shoemaker was there, but then married Jean and became, I guess, a full-time mother. They had three children and was more or less had all of her time taken up by that for some decades. In 1982, when the children were off her hands, she decided she would like to do something, so they discussed it, and they, Jean found in speaking to her and doing some trial runs that, in fact, she has wonderful visual acuity. And the way in which they discover these objects is they take pairs of photographs separated by maybe an hour, and then they compare the two in a stereo microscope, and what happens is that all the stars appear to be, because they're all standing still relative to each other, they basically, when you look into the stereo microscope, they all appear to be in the same plane. But any object which has moved, the human brain picks out as either being above that plane or below it. And it turns out that Carolyn Shoemaker is probably the best person in the world in terms of that eye-brain coupling in order to see those. And because of that, she, since 1982, has actually discovered, I believe it's now 31 different comets. It's either 31 or 32. I do know that she's definitely the female record holder for comet discoveries, but she's now closing in on the all-time record, which was set by Jean-Louis Pons, a French astronomer in the first three decades of the 19th century, who, of course, without very much competition, there were very few other people with decent-sized telescopes looking at the sky then. He actually discovered 33. Certainly, either during 1994 or in the early part of 1995, we're expecting Carolyn Shoemaker to overtake him and rest the laurel to the United States for the record number of comet discoveries.
Mm. And what about David Levy?
Well, David Levy, again, started off as a, in English literature, but was an amateur astronomer with a fairly big telescope, which he looked through himself. And in fact, he's discovered eight comets on his own, let alone the 20 or so which he's discovered jointly with the Shoemakers. And it was basically a matter of joining forces. David lives in Tucson, Arizona, and the Shoemakers live rather farther north in Flagstaff, Arizona. But each month they drive their own separate ways to across towards San Diego to the Palomar Observatory in California and meet up there and carry out their observation program. So David Levy is a case of somebody without any technical training as such in physics or astronomy or any of these things which astronomers and astrophysicists usually have undergone a training in, but just somebody who is very keen, which is a very important thing. It's absolutely essential to be enthusiastic if you're going to do anything great, and also basically trained on the spot. And he's just very good at with his eyes and in observing, and that's quite often something that can't be trained. It is a matter of a skill which some people have and others don't.
And yourself, what are your research areas, Duncan?
Oh, I'm interested in all the small bodies in the solar system, that is asteroids, comets and meteoroids. At the University of Adelaide, I started a program when I arrived there in 1985 of observing meteors with radars. And again, we have a very prolific program there. In fact, actual meteor observations have been carried out there since about 1950 or 1951. So we're continuing and expanding that. So that's using a radar for observing meteors. Most of the year, however, I'm at the Anglo-Australian Observatory, where I have a little team who is in the same business as the Shoemaker-Levy team, basically, that is looking for asteroids and comets on Earth crossing orbits. Now, we're actually more interested in asteroids, although we do turn up comets from time to time. And as I say, we've been running that program now for about 4 years, and it's the only such program in the whole of the Southern Hemisphere. And it is the complement, if you like, of three search programs in North America. The Shoemaker-Levy teams, Eleanor Helin from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory runs a similar program. There is also another program using the Space Watch Telescope at the University of Arizona. So when any of those three teams discover an asteroid or maybe a comet which is needs to be followed up, especially if it's moving south, we'll then get a message asking us to grab it, to get an observation of it, to define its orbit as precisely as we can. Equally well, if we find one, then we'll relay the information to them and hope that they're able to get an observation of it. So, yes, we have a very successful program. In fact, between us, all these teams working together internationally, we do what I think is a very good job, especially given that a string and sealing wax type operation. We're certainly not a big budget operation. We're trying to do the best we can with very limited funds.
So you keep in contact with each other all around the world?
Oh, look, on the average day I take in 10, 15 electronic mail messages, which are mostly to do with new discoveries and so on, and the Shoemakers and the other two teams in North America and the Central Nexus at Harvard University. We typically have a message every two or three days from one of those. So it is a very close-knit community. It's the only way to do this sort of thing is international collaboration.
And I dare say the internet will be quite alive over the next month or so, won't it?
Yes, obviously everybody's going to be collaborating very closely. These huge networks of people, lots of people spreading out, from especially from the northern hemisphere, to come to the south to watch the impacts, or spreading to all sorts of different longitudes, because it's preferable for it to be close to certain periods of the night when Jupiter is best visible for observing the effects and so on. So obviously it's going to be a very exciting time.
Mm. Well then, Duncan, I certainly wish you the best of luck in your observations over the coming months. And thanks for joining us tonight on The Space Show.
Thank you very much, Andrew. You're very welcome.